Okay, so we want to welcome the Perlas, Dan and Gabriel. Thank you. And okay, maybe make a seat for the walls. Let the walls move over a little bit. Okay. We want to welcome Sam and Michael from Boston. And of course, we're happy to have Zach's dad staying with us. We're so lucky. We're very grateful. We're very grateful. So we like to tackle, every time we meet, we like to tackle one broad issue in the parsha. Sometimes there are broad messages, and then also tackle a few minor ones if we get around to it. Doesn't always work out that way, right? We know a little secret. Big sheets, a lot of information, never really get that far. So what's the broad message that Parshas told us? Large, not just this word, that pasuk. What are we looking at? So first of all, there's a lot of asymmetry. Because Sefer Bereishis is being driven by three personalities. And the division isn't exactly balanced. In fact, it's a little lopsided. Because Avram has three, and Yaakov has six, and Yitzchak has one. And Yaakov's three we neatly package: departure, revelation, domesticity, Lech Lecha, Vayera, Chayesara. We talked about the three poles of Avram's identity. And Yaakov's going to go through a firestorm of controversy and struggle and family dynamics. So he needs six just to get things all settled and get his ducks in a row by the time he leaves. And Yitzchak's left with just one parsha. It's a little unfair. Like, put yourself in Yitzchak's shoes. Give me a little airtime. I have got a story. I've got a narrative. Where's Yitzchak's story? Okay, at least he has one parsha. Okay, let's make the most of the parsha, right? Make the most of what you have. Look up, don't look down, and do your best. So he's got a parsha. But the parsha is a little bit off. Because he has a parsha, but he doesn't really have a name. What do you mean he doesn't have a name? Well, you see, name changes in Sefer Bereishis are iconic. Because they represent transitions. And sometimes people have murky double names, like Hagar being called Keturah. And sometimes their dual names are explicit, like Yaakov being called Yisrael, because there are two modes of Jewish identity. The struggle of Jewish history, the triumph of Jewish history, heel holding, surpassing your enemies, Achezeth Ba'akei Besav, Kisar Yisim L'kima Nishim Matuchal. Avram goes from being a local leader, Avram, to being a father, Avraham, Sarai. Everyone's changing their names. Except for one person who just never gets that name change. He's waiting online. The bureaucrats don't get around to him. I went to get my passport a few weeks ago. Like this, like, quiet American sitting quietly, and I'm waiting with my son and my wife. Like, everyone's closing up shop. Like, I'm not one of the screamers. And they said, like, what are you doing here? I said, we're waiting to be interviewed for our passport. Oh, yeah, they lost their passport. They lost the application. Don't worry, they found it. I got on the plane. But, like, Yitzchak's waiting, and they closed the shop. And where's my name change? I signed the form. Give me a name change. No, Yitzchak, you don't get a name change. You don't transition. You don't have that dramatic moment in which Hashem changes your name into something else. Okay, but at least I got a name, right? Everyone's got a name. And the name means something, right? Unless it doesn't. Because the name for everyone, say for Bereishis, somehow reflects their life, their ambitions, their talent, their struggle, their goals. It's got them, right? Not Yitzchak. You know what he was named? Because they were laughing when they heard about him being born. Could you imagine if your father called you hot cocoa? Because when he heard that your mom was pregnant, he had a cup of cocoa. Come on, Dad. A little creativity. Don't call me hot cocoa. Oh, I had a bad day, so I'm going to call you sorrow. Sorrow, because we're having a great time, so we'll call you laughter. Where's my name? It's about Yaakov is holding and clutching and grasping, and Avram is leading and inspiring, and Yitzchak. Because they're laughing because they didn't think I'd be born. That's a nice name to wake up to every morning. To be called something not about you, but about people's response to the notification of your birth. So this is getting a little suspicious here. It's got one parsha, no name, no name change, and even his name really isn't personal. It's something larger than him. The laughter that accompanies. So now you got our attention. Now we're on to something. Okay, but let's at least look at the parsha, okay? At least you got a parsha. Maybe not a name, maybe not a name change. You got your parsha. What do you want? Stop complaining. You have a parsha. But it's a pretty boring parsha. Doesn't have anything of the drama and the excitement and the adventure. Not traveling anywhere. No trips, no voyages. Isn't Ulysses? Nothing's happening here. No angels. The only one of the Avos who didn't encounter any malachim. No wars, no battles. Avram has his wars. Yaakov has his battles. Everything is peaceful and calm, appeasement. No generals, no diplomats, no treaties, nothing. Nothing dramatic, no encounter, because every good book and every good bio has an encounter, has a protagonist and an antagonist and a struggle and no struggles, no apparitions, no dreams, no guarantees. Very, very humdrum life this Yitzchak is leading. Okay, but even if it's boring, you can still leave your imprint when it's boring, right? You could still decide who's going to get the brachos and decide who's going to follow your destiny, right? You can still make that decision, right? You're not making that decision because the decision is engineered by everyone around him. So even the one core moment in Hiparsha that has no drama to it, Yitzchak has no role and no authorship and no agency. And of course, his blindness is a metaphor for lack of agency. Okay, he doesn't give the brachos. We all know why. He was biased towards Esav. It has to be. We can wash all that away. But you know what? Let's sink our teeth into something. He's the hero. When is he the hero? Forget the brachos. He's being engineered, being manipulated. When is Yitzchak the hero? Hey, he faces a famine. That's a moment of courage. So let's hone in on the famine because we got a person who was facing a famine staying in Eretz Yisrael. So let's read source Gimel. Vayira of Ba'aretz. There's a famine. Milvad harav harishon asher bimei Avram. Oh, Rebbe Hanashal, I can't even have my own famine. This is the sequel to Avram's famine. Gott in Himmel, can't I at least have a famine? Just give me a famine. I don't need a name change. I don't need angel. I just want my own famine. Call it Yitzchak's famine. I'm not asking for much. I'm not asking for food. I'm asking for turkey. I just want a famine so I can stand tall and face it. And it's the second part of Avram's famine. So now Yitzchak has to respond to the famine. He says, you know what? I'm going to think of something really creative because I'm going down to Avimelech to the coast and I got this problem with my wife and she's going to think, let me see, how could I wiggle my way out of this one? Let me think of something creative. Hey, maybe I'll call her my sister. Anyone heard that one before? No. It's Avram's ploy. Can't even find his own solutions. What is going on with this man? No name, no change, no drama, no parsha, sick one parsha, no famine. And then after the famine abates, he tries to dig wells, and what happens? Vayeshev Yitzchak, Vayeshev Yitzchak, source number Dalad, Vayachbar is Be'eres Hamayim. Shechafu B'mei Avram Aviv. You go back and dig the same wells. Come on, you have nothing. Just dig a well. Take a shovel, dig a well, call it your own name. Vayegralam Shemos, source Dalad, Kashemos, Ashekralam Aviv. Call the same names. What is going on with this person? Who doesn't barely have a parsha, doesn't have a famine, can't dig his own wells, and calls them the same names. Okay, well, at the very least, he's the future of the Jewish people. So Hashem's going to come to him in that moment, that Bris Beit Hamasara moment, and reveal himself to Yitzchak and say, here, you're the chosen one. So Hashem does come, but let's read what Hashem says. Source number, hey, we'll then go back to Gimel. This is Parakhat Gimel the first time. Ki varecha varechacha, you're the one. You're like the sand, you're like the stars. The year of Zarachai Shar Avav. I'm actually, I'm reading from Gimel now, sorry. Ekev Asher Shem Avram Bekoli. You know why I'm selecting you? Because your father Avram was such a great guy. Hashem, please, talk about me a little bit. Not because my father was so meritorious, not because my father was so pious. What about me? What about Ekev Asher Halach Yacharecho? Ekev Asher Shem Avram Bekoli? And then 20 seconds later, when Hashem appears to him the second time, he's got two moments with Hashem, two private audiences. One in Parak Chavav Pasuk Aleph, one in Parak Chavav Pasuk Chavdalet, the same paragraph, part Gimel. Vayera Elam Hashem Balayla Hu Vayomer Anochi Elokei Avram Avicha. Hello? I'm here, I'm in the room. What about me? Don't talk about Elokei Avram Avicha. Tell me that you're my God, okay? Elokecha, I'll watch you. Al Tira Kitcha Anochi Uverachticha Verbesia Saracha. I'm going to support you. Ba'avor Avraham Abdi. If I'm Yisrael, I'm saying, you know, I'm throwing in the towel. I can't even get a bracha. I'm giving up on the famine. Just give me a bracha. Give me a bracha for me. what is going on with this parsha and this man and this story? What are we meant to learn from this story? I'm making it comical, obviously. I'm trying to. Probably not my strong point. But what is going on here? And just in case you weren't paying attention, the Torah draws your eyes and rivets you, because how does the pasuk begin? Parsha begins, source number one, Aleph. Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. These are the stories and the legends of Yitzchak. Avraham holidus Yitzchak. He was born to Avraham. Could you imagine at your hesped, you spend your whole life trying to change the world, learn Torah, be a good person. Someone gets up and says, his father's name was Tehein Asher Tzura B'Tzarachai. Should have a long life in Olam Haba, because his father's name was. Ela told us Yitzchak. And just those of you who have a literary eye, just look at the two words that I highlighted. It's called enjambment, when there are two words that don't necessarily belong next to each other, and they're yoked together violently to create a fact. Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham only is Yitzchak. So what's at the nuclear core of this pasuk? Avraham. 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 Even the pasuk that announces Yitzchak's birth is a pasuk that highlights Avraham more than it highlights Yitzchak. You know, sometimes you see people, they don't know their proper place at the chassid. It's the kids getting married, not the parents. You're in the background. Get into the background. It's not about you. You always have to know what it's about. I've seen people take over the wedding. It's not your wedding. It's someone else's. Take over. As was not a condition last night. I try to be as quiet and mousy as possible. I'm not there. I'm not getting married. I'm just a traffic guy. You got the ring. You got the groin. I'll make the bracha. I'm not on stage. Chassid Kalori there. Make yourself invisible. Learn how to make yourself invisible. And then Chazal sends this source number above, and of course, with this, the stand-up ends, and we'll get down to business. Avram Nikra Avram. Avram was called Avram, the Medrash says, source number above. Yitzchak Nikra Avram, and also Yitzchak was called Avram. The Chsiv Ve'ela told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram. Where do you think I got this whole discussion from? It's embedded in that Medrash. Of course, you have to see a Medrash and be able to expand it and trace it. But the Medrash tells us, Avram is called Avram, Yitzchak is called Avram. What's up? What's up in Parshas Torahs? What is the message? Crucial message about life. It is so easy to be a revolutionary. It is so easy to come with brave and new ideas because they feel fresh. Because you're dismantling the past and you're building the future and you have your fingerprints all over it. And revolution carries the air and the scent of excitement and adventure and courage and bravery. It's new, it's different. And Avram was a consummate revolutionary because he changed human consciousness. Avram discussed the God, Hashem, who was kind and compassionate, not angry and vengeful. A creator who loved his creatures, not some grotesque figure in heaven who toyed with them like playthings. A creator who wanted prosperity for human beings, not ruin and destruction, because for 2,000 years people assumed Hashem was angry. So that's all they saw. They saw destruction, they saw dispersal, they saw floods. They assumed Hashem was angry. And Avram spoke of Hashem who was kind, who wanted human progress, who wanted charity, who wanted gentility. That's why you couldn't just be a man of faith, you have to be a man of chesed, because you couldn't just talk the talk, you walk the walk. You couldn't just describe Hashem who wanted charity and kindness, you have to actually be an agent of charity and kindness. You want to be a believer, you have to also be a doer. You arrive at theology through good deeds. You don't separate the two. You don't read a Mar Nevuchim or a book of philosophy and then take your hat off and go help. You want to understand a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Be like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Well, you can't be like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. There's a problem there. It's a little bit infinite. It's a little bit non-physical. The closest we can come in human behavior to being like Hashem is being a kind person, an engaging person, an embracing person, a polite person, a selfless person, just like a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Being invisible. Hashem is invisible, right? He's in the room. You don't know he's here because we think we're breathing and Hashem is sustaining our breath. So try to help people not by dominating, but by pulling back and withdrawing and not trying to be so ever-present so that you tower over them. Suck the oxygen out of the air. Give people space. Give people room to grow. We're trying to give. We got this. This wasn't on cue, guys. We're asking one of the things that we try to do in Yeshiva Haratzion. I got to recruit you guys, right? Give you room to grow. We can't. We want to. After all of chinuch is indoctrination. We want to try to change you into a more passionate Ovid Hashem. We got to give you room to spread and to grow and to. Otherwise, there'll be a pale shadow on yourself. I can dominate you, but that won't give me any work. Got to breathe life into you and let you expand and let your give you breath, give you space, so you can grow and become your own person. My favorite Rav Amital line, I don't know where we're getting to this one, but we'll get back to Toldos in a few minutes. It was a Lichtenstein's 70th birthday, and everyone was gathered in Yerushalayim. And you know what we do in Gush when someone has a birthday? We give Divrei Torah, long Divrei Torah. Very exciting birthday parties. So everyone came, all these dignitaries, and it was Friday, and it was steaming hot, it was a summer day, and like, Oh my goodness, that was not the birthday party. Divrei Torah, Divrei Torah. And Rav Avital was always saved for last, but if you're the last rabbi to speak, you have to string of rabbis, you know how much time you have left. So Rav Avital was always good at that one liner. He could bring the house down in one line. So Shabbos, Friday afternoon, a hot summer day, we heard 14 Divrei Torah about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And Rav Avital had about 10 seconds to speak, and he got up and he said, Ani agid lachem, ma hevdel ben Rav Lichtenstein l'shar Rosh Yeshiva. I'll tell you what the difference between Rav Aaron and the other Rosh Yeshiva is. Shar Rosh Yeshiva, Rotsim Chasidim. Rav Lichtenstein wants to tell midim. Most Rosh Yeshiva want Chasidim, Rav Aaron wants Talmidim. Ma hevdel ben Chasidim l'talmidim. Chasidim makshivim l'kol davar sh'Rav omer. Talmidim makshivim l'shum davar sh'Rav omer. And he sat down. You can't be us, guys. You can't be us. It's hard enough for me to be me. I don't need to be. Believe me, that's a sorry state. I'm just getting by on my own. How can we take all the passion and all the Masorah and all the greatness that we saw and infuse you with that so that you can take the you in you, the personality, the individual, the unique qualities, and become a star, become great? Stardom is always irreducible, irreproducible. You can't reproduce stardom. Stardom has to be genius and new. And so everyone was new. Everyone was fresh. Everyone was exciting. But here's the punchline. Every revolution is only as successful as the post-revolutionary effects and attempts to entrench the great ideas the revolution introduced. No revolution will succeed without a subsequent moment of entrenchment. Entrenchment, entrenchment, embedding. French Revolution, American Revolution. Contemporaneous events, more or less. One soars, one belly flops. Why? Because this is a nice Thanksgiving. Didn't plan it that way, told us Thanksgiving. Because the American militiamen became politicians and diplomats. They were able to parlay all that fighting, all that revolutionary spirit into statesmanship, into building a country, into building a government, into building a democracy, into building a culture. So the revolution yielded a period of calm. As far as geographical, they weren't in Europe, they weren't fighting wars. Again, it wasn't only their brilliance and their genius, but they're able to transition away from revolution and take those great ideas, embed them in human consciousness, embed them in culture, embed them in family, embed them in community. French Revolution just kept revolving. It's an endless revolution. Today's heroes became tomorrow's victims. Robespierre was guillotined. Jean-Paul Marat was stabbed in his bathtub. Never it settled. Things that don't settle, you suck the air out. Vacuums happen. Nature abhors a vacuum. Politics abhors a vacuum. French Revolution paves the way for Napoleon to just become another tyrant. It never settles. Traditions of democracy, traditions of statesmanship, traditions of equality never settle. It's true with every revolution. It's true with Torah. There are moments in which Torah cycles into brave new experiences where there's these supernova explosions of new ways to learn Torah. The Tkufas HaTanaim and the Amoraim. Are you kidding me, guys? I hope that you understand the statement now that you would have laughed at 3 months ago. If I had a time machine and one setting on that time machine, I would die to go back to the days of the Tanayim, to sit at the feet of Rabbi Akiva and Rava and Rav and Shmuel, whose mastery of the Torah that I study with every ounce of my being superseded my imagination and reached para-prophetic levels to be able to see Shmuel teach Torah and the sweep that I'm trying to capture in my own study of Torah and to hear that, what would I not give? I give a finger, I mean, that's glory, but I give a finger, I get it back. What I not give to meet Shmuel? What I not give to meet Rabbi? This explosion of Torah engagement, unparalleled. And then for 500 years, things settled down. And from the year 500 to the year 1000 is the Tekufas HaGeonim. And the Geonim weren't innovators. They didn't write new Svarim. They collated, they curated, they collected, they edited, they filtered, they processed, they assimilated. It took time. You can't absorb it all. It's like drinking it's like drinking water from a fire hydrant. You can't drink too much water. It's coming at you. It's too much water. Turn down the fire hydrant. Adjust the knobs a little bit. Give a person a glass of water. How do you take all that volume and absorb it? It takes time. Okay, it's going to take time. I'm jumping ahead historically thousands of years. It's going to take time for a redemption to cycle. There's too much to absorb. We've been in Gullus for 2,000 years. We've been traumatized by the Holocaust. We're collecting 52 different cultures and dialects. Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Yemenites, guys from Boston. How do we do it all? Just see if you're paying attention. How do we collect all these people and create a unifying narrative and a common culture and a common interest? It's going to take us a few generations, guys. Don't be impatient about redemption. You're laying the groundwork for the future. Mashiach will come. he'll pass by Yeshivat Har Etzion, I promise you. He'll pass by the base madrash that you're learning in and the stones that we laid, because this is historical. Your eyes may see it, or he may come long after they're shut permanently. Doesn't make a difference. Your fingerprints are all over it. So being in Israel means that every moment you invest, every effort you invest in this country, in this people, is pre-redemptive. And it is investment in our historical future. So now all of a sudden it's 1100. And once again, Torah burst on the scene of Rishonim. And the Rishonim taught us once again to view Torah globally. That was the implicit message of Tosfos. Every Tosfos begins, V'im Tomar. How can the Gemara say something here when the Sanhedrin says something different? Stop viewing Torah in narrow profiles. View Torah panoramic. Torah is a system. It's Hashem's integrated logic. No one line can be understood until you know all of it, which is a problem, but we'll do our best. That is all integrated circuit. And until you know the whole circuit, you know nothing. So it also says, stop reading a page. Read a system. How can you just read this Gemara unless you're comparing it to three other Gemaras? The sugya I'm learning with the boys in my shiur. We're going to have to read five sugyas just to begin to tackle this question. Tosfos reintroduced the logic that had been implicit 500 years earlier, 600 years earlier, but had fallen out of favor because people didn't command Torah as well as they did in the days of the Tanaim. Tanaim knew it all. Tosfos had to articulate it. Then all of a sudden, Tosfos and the Rambam and the Rashba and the Raven. And all of a sudden, in the 16th century, Yosef Karo writes the Shulchan Aruch. And now the great age of collecting Torah begins. And there are very few Chiddushei Torah written. Now it's a question of stabilizing halacha in the Jewish world. We don't need new Chiddushei now as much as we need halacha consolidation. Two destabilizing events of the 15th century force of Yosef Karo to write the Shulchan Aruch and to try to standardize halacha for all Jews. Obviously, Spanish Inquisition. Those Spanish Jews, we don't have any Spaniards here, so don't worry, we have others, okay? Where's Daniel? Can you be our Spaniard? You're close enough, right? Gibraltar, right? Can you make believe you're a Spaniard? Okay, those Spaniards, the Spanish Jews, they came running over to France carrying their traditions of the Rambam and the Ramban and insulting those French Jews. This is how you make Havdalah in Shul? Oh, you Frenchies. Let me tell you how the Ramban did it back in Spain. This is how you eat your matzah? This is how you blow your shofar? Let me tell you, the Rambam did it back in Andrasimba. So all of a sudden, the Jewish world is being destabilized by mass migration of Spanish Jews across the globe carrying different customs. It's the only event that rivals what we're going through right now. We're going through something similar, where we have Sephardim and Ashkenazim and Teimanim and Chalabim, different groups. Normally, Jews lived in localized settings, and they perpetuated the traditions across generations, but they had mass movements. And the second event of the 15th century was the printing press, Gutenberg printing press. Now, all of a sudden, it's easy to print Sephardim. Many more volumes were printed. No one really knew the difference between works of integrity and cheap works of inanity. So there's no way to know the difference between a real safer and a false safer. So you have to carry out the right to Shulchan Aruch. And then for the next 250 years, from 1559, when the Shulchan Aruch was written, till around 1800? Not many great Chiddushei Torah were written. The great Sfarim that were written were trying to parse and process the Shach. The Shach parses the Shulchan Aruch. The Taz parses the Shulchan Aruch. They go into great detail. It sounds like a Sefer on Gemara. Here's a trick question, okay? What is the most important Sefer on Shas written in the 17th century? I think I have the Sefer. I probably don't. And the reason I may not have it is because it's a very marginal Sefer. It's called the Kikayon Deyona. If you haven't heard of it, I didn't either before someone told me that. Because the great Sfarim of the 17th century written on Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avram, Shulchan Aruch, all the Shalas Vachuros, the Chassam Sofer, the Kibeg, a little bit later on. So all of a sudden, there's less Chidushin, there's less innovation. And then, pow, 1850, Reb Chaim arrives on the scene. Revolution. Not a revolution, but a reconstitution of ancient ways of thinking that had fallen out of implicit intuition because we just lost that command of Torah. Reb Chaim had to give us a language, a way of thinking, terms, right? When you give language to ideas, it becomes clear. We think in language, we think in categories. That's why I'm pushing you guys so much to speak with precision, to articulate your ideas with precision, to eliminate all those heavy words like sorta, kinda, like, do you know, just take them out. Think and speak sharp and precise, because then you're grabbing ideas rather than circling them in murky attempts to stab at them. Grab ideas, hold them, articulate them, and develop them in your minds. And then you have precision of thought and precision of experience. And now we're in an age, I think, where we need less innovation. Who can name the most important two Sfarim written in the 20th century? Go on. little audience feedback, audience participation. Two most important svarim of the 20th century. Mishneh Berurah, probably. I think even more than Mishneh Berurah. Nope. Art Scroll and Kahati. With all due respect, Mishneh Berurah, how many hundreds of thousands of people started to learn Torah after Kahati broke through that barrier and accessorized Torah to the masses? And of course, now Art Scroll and all the... You guys know something really cute? You know how you call an art scroll in Hebrew? This is really a good parsha. A good parsha is on what? No, Steinsaltz in Hebrew is a genre, not a volume. You say, pass me a Steinsaltz, you mean a translation. So it's ironic that Steinsaltz has become less popular after art scroll, but it's also ironic that people call art scroll Steinsaltz because he broke the sound barrier. He introduced the first translation. He just passed away 2 years ago. So it's interesting that in Israel, little Israeli culture, right? In Israel, Steinsaltz means an art school. Pass me a Steinsaltz, you get an art school. Okay, so if you pass the Steinsaltz, I didn't want a Steinsaltz, I wanted a Steinsaltz. Okay, you know what I'm talking about. That's the way life cycles historically. And that's what's happening in Yitzchak. Yitzchak, his challenge is not to take center stage and have his own new slate of challenges and dramatic interactions and encounters with angels and new promises and new names and transitions. Because if it's all a new revolution, then everything that Avraham accomplished will be wiped away like the sands that he's promised his children will build. Because the tide comes in and the tide goes out and you build your castles and they get wiped away. So it's very easy for Yitzchak to feel brave and new and novel and different and I'm a revolutionary and get a Che Guevara shirt and wear it proudly in public and I'm Viva la Revolucion, I'm going to, they'll paint about me and they'll sing songs about me and they'll celebrate me. And everything Avram accomplishes is out the window. And this is the true measure of Yitzchak's strength, Gevurah. This is why his midah is Gevurah. Because it takes inner strength not to need the limelight and not to need the excitement and not to need the adventure and not to need to be new, fresh, different, revolutionary. To be able to walk in the shadow of your father and dig the same pits, calling the same names, following the same path, and just let time take its course so that the values your father introduced can settle into the public consciousness. The people can live their day-to-day lives based on those values. Day-to-day, not the adventures. Day-to-day. That's the message of Toldos. Eila Toldos Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham Olidus Yitzchak, and the whole parsha is just Yitzchak trying to entrench those great ideas of Avraham. What does this have to do with you? It's a nice story. Farsh has told us, if you want to get extra credit on your history AP, you can say you went to Gresham, you learned about the French Revolution and why it failed. But why is this important for you? Because personal experience mirrors human history. They're stacked. Everything in life is synchronous. They're all stacked. Life doesn't happen in different ways. Hashem created one system by which everything functions. Any system you learn teaches you about other systems. All the systems are concentric. So if you learn about history, you learn about yourself. You learn about yourself, you learn about history. You learn about science, you learn about, and of course, Torah is the hub. And all the radial spokes emerge from the hub. Torah is the hub of all realities. And when you study Baba Kama, you may think you're studying oxes and sheep. You're really studying the hub of Hashem's logic, which radiates logic out to all human experience. You're at a moment in life in which much of your experience is Avraham-like. And don't waste it. And I have to tell you this all the time. When I see boys wasting it, there's not a shred of anger in me. I cry in depths of my soul when I see people wasting, because this is a time I dream of reliving. This is the greatest time in your life. You will never have a period in life like you have now. Spread your wings. Discover. Grow. Have the courage to enter new territory and meet new people and let this world of Hashem and this world of passion affect you and touch your soul. As you grow older, your life becomes a lot more shrunken. I can't make changes in my life. I'm a father, my grandfather, profession. So the latitude of my life shrinks and you operate on the margins. You move your life to and fro. But this is the time to build your identity. What a glorious time of your life. Around 17 to 27, more or less, these are the 10 years, more or less you build your identity. Around 27, 30, you settle in. Then you live that identity with changes, with slight nuanced shifts. But this is when you're building, and it's fresh, and it's adventurous, and it should be. Let that whiff of excitement inspire you, that you want to grow, and you want to become something and someone, and dream, and have ambition. And don't settle for a mediocrity. Don't settle for who you are. Try to become someone you're not. It's easy to walk in place. It's more difficult to step out of your box and try to become something you're not yet. It takes courage. It's the unknown. You have to walk into the unknown to move forward. Anytime you change, you're going to be shifting from the common to the familiar to something you don't know. Remember this for the rest of your life. The door to change, the doorknob to change is always fear. You'll always have fear when you're about to encounter change. Learn to live with it. Courage is not the denial of fear, but the ability to operate under its influence. To live with fear and to be able to advance through fear. So this is the time. Don't be afraid. So many guys in yeshiva are just so afraid to make that move, to make that shift. One of the parents, I forget, a lot of parents came in today. What do we hope from yeshiva? I don't think it was another parent. What do we hope to accomplish in yeshiva? I think there's one line. What do we hope to accomplish in yeshiva? Come for a year and you'll see. What do we hope to accomplish in yeshiva? I said, back burner, front burner. Most boys that are firm and orthodox, they're firm. I wouldn't say that firm guy in Avodas Hashem is on the front burner. What excites them? Sports, ambition, career, profession, whatever. They're firm because they're firm. They're good boys, they're studious boys, they're diligent boys, they're obedient boys. How can you take religion from the back burner to the front burner? And then it becomes your passion. It becomes you, what you live for. It becomes the center core of your identity. I want to be Ana Avda Kodesh Baruch Hu. I want to serve Hashem. I want to be the best version of myself by serving Hashem. Take that opportunity. Don't be afraid. No one's going to steal you from you. I know that's why you're afraid, because you're afraid to give up yourself. Good news is, you're not giving up yourself. We're not going to take it from you. We're just going to try to amplify it. As we like to say, don't listen, parents. In Gush, we don't brainwash you. We brainwash you into believing you're not being brainwashed. It's the best form of brainwashing. Don't worry, we're not going to brainwash anyone. Best you. Best you is about to happen. But, don't be Peter Pan. What does that mean? Don't be Peter Pan. Some people never grow up. And some people can't shift into Yitzchak. And some people remain young forever. And that sounds great in a rock and roll song, but it's not great in life. And you have to know how to shift into the Yitzchak periods in your life. When it's just repeating your steps day in, day out, same axe, same place on the tree. Have you ever chopped down a tree? You like swinging the axe on the bottom and swinging the axe on the top. It's a little Abraham Lincoln. It was Washington or the Cherokee. The little on the bottom. You want to follow the tree? You after you after you. You got to. Same place. It's not exciting. You're not cutting through the bark. It's just the same. Massive success in life comes from repeated efforts. And you know what? Here's the word you got to get used to if you want to be great in life. It's going to sound a bit abrasive. It's going to sound a bit strident. You have to learn to live with boredom. Because if you're always chasing adventure, then you're always diffusing your energy. And you're never massively investing. And diffusers meet mediocrity. Concentrators meet excellence. If you concentrate and focus and repeat, wash, rinse, repeat, the same act. That's what Yitzchak is capable of. The same wells, the same names, the same famines. It's not just true about human history. It's true about human identity. And if you want these great ideas to settle in, you have to be able to take revolutionary moments in your life and live them without changing them. And constant change just effaces previous identity. And you're constantly spinning into new identity and nothing settles. Now, it's going to be true in your life at some point, and I'd like to give you messages that you'll come back to one day when you're 27, when you're 30, but it's also true now. And it's true in particular now. Now it's clear to you that Elul is long in the rearview mirror. It's Rosh Chodesh Kislev tomorrow. I'm going to say this as unthreatening as I can, but I mean to threaten you. Your year is almost halfway over. What does that mean? Yes, there are two periods to your year in yeshiva. From the Chagim to Chanukah, okay, it's not really halfway because we have 3 weeks. And then from Chanukah to Purim, and you'd be surprised how quickly those granules of sand start to fall through your fingers. And you wake up in June, and what happened? What happened to my year? It's finished. So, whatever you need to clean up, no longer time to wait. If you need to clean things up, now's the time to clean things up. We're 3 weeks away from Kislev. Kislev, you're going to sit there, Kislev from Hanukkah, you're going to sit there on Hanukkah and say, oh, I'm halfway to the end of my year. Because after Pesach, a lot changes. It's much quicker, especially this year, because it's a relatively late Pesach. It's a relatively late Pesach. Doesn't change us, because we go till Tisha B'Av. Changes you, because a lot of you leave June 15. So for us, it really doesn't make a difference when Pesach comes, because yeshiva stays open until Tisha B'Av. But a lot of people who leave June 15th, it does make a difference, because the later Pesach is, the more crunched and the more contracted your summer's month is. So there's a little bit of Yitzchak happening now. If Ella was Avram, and you meet new people, and new trips, and new... It's going to get cold. And it's going to get boring. And it's going to get day in, day out. You want to be successful in this yeshiva, not hovering above the yeshiva, picking up some nice ideas. A lot of people hover. They hover through yeshiva. Pick up some nice ideas, pick up some nice hashkafa, make some nice friends, and they move on. You want to entrench yourself in this yeshiva and in this growth? You have to be a little bit of Yitzchak now. Now, how does that manifest itself practically? Well, the obvious and the less than obvious. And this is not a good message for parents, but who cares? Rip off the band-aid, okay? When your parents come and invite you to dinner, go, because they're here for you. But not every invitation you get for dinner in Yerushalayim has to be accepted with a yes, because they're going to come fast and furious. And then you're going to be out 3 nights a week. And then your week's going to collapse. So I can't tell you, of course, I would never tell you to do anything that would hurt the feelings of your parents, and we have these conversations, obviously, if their best friends are coming, you rent or whatever, but if you know that the person is just inviting you as a courtesy, as they may be inviting you, doesn't mean you have to just sheepishly say yes. You can kindly say, I just really would like to focus on my learning. I'd like to focus on my night seder. And no, you don't want other ways. Someone just mentioned that to me today, so it came up. But you have to make the shift in life from Avram to Yitzchak, and it's going to happen in life, and when it happens, accept it. It's going to happen later in your life when you finish carving identity and you have to now entrench identity and create. You have to create by digging. That's the icon of this parsha, to dig. Avram's a roamer, Yitzchak's a digger. If you want to create and establish, you have to dig, not roam. Linear, not lateral. Down, not out. Consolidation, not dispersal. It's a little bit true right now also. It's going to be true your whole life. They're going to be alternating moments, and you have to learn to accept it and to calibrate it. Life's about calibration. You'll feel these great moments in life, and then you'll feel moments where you adjust the routine. As you get older, you'll love the routine, and you realize how important the routine is. You just want the routine. As you get older, meaning becomes more gratifying than adventure. It's a bit of a shift. When you're young, adventure and excitement is what draws you. When you're older, it's meaning. And meaning you achieve by repeated massive efforts that don't seem to provide new horizons and new vistas, but just fill you up with meaning. You've lived a good day. You've done things that are great. Learn that frequency in your heart. It's about learning yourself and learning when it happens to you how to maximize those moments rather than fighting against it and trying to buck the tide and fight yourself. And become internal. I want more, and I want to find new, and I'm going to run to Yerushalayim, and I'm going to chase them. Just accept, just lean into the reality that is emerging around you and excel within that reality rather than trying to re-landscape a reality that's not appropriate if it doesn't exist. Okay, that's the big thing. We always like to talk about one big thing. Let's talk about one small thing, okay? So, let's talk about the worst trade, okay? Let's open up to the audience. We've got some people my age. What's the worst trade you can remember? I don't know, Nolan Ryan? Any Mets fans there? Nolan Ryan for like a bag of chips or something?
Mets.
What?
Arrogance.
No, trade.
Trade.
Oh, not, trade. The worst trade.
Is it good? Trade.
That's like a good skip. We just kept going. I'd say trades, you'd say trades, and we wouldn't be communicating. Worst trade ever. Come on, Herschel Walk. I don't know. Big famous terrible sports trades. Okay. Well, a little kudos to our Native American friends who possibly perpetrated the worst trade ever, right? Some trinkets for Manhattan. Okay, so I don't know. We got the Manhattan trade, the Nolan Ryan trade, the Herschel Walker trade. I'm going with the lentils for Bechorah trade. I think that's a pretty bad one. That's a stinker. Okay, fire the GM. Whoever Asaph's GM was. Run him out of town. That was a bad trade. I know you got some draft picks and some future considerations, but I don't know. I'm not buying that one. I'm giving it a D. Maybe an F. What happened? Let's look at the Ace of Soul. How does he make such a colossal mistake? We have a Pasuk. And we have Chazal. And they help us understand what Ace was saying. I don't know how much we'll get to, because there are different layers to what Ace was saying, but got a little bit. Let's read the pesukim. Vayazid Yaakov neziv vayavar Esav min asad devin hoyeh. Source number two. Vayamar Esav el Yaakov haliteni na min adam adam azeh keyef anach ha-ken kashu adam. Yaakov mechach hayam esmachar eschali. Pow, here it is. Vayamar Esav. Hina rachel lech lamos. V'lam azali b'chora. What's he saying? Hina rachel lech lamos v'lam azali b'chora. According to Rashi, he's got religion wrong. Rashi? Yenachay lech lamos. Amar Esav, Esav says, tell me, Yaakov, a little bit about this Bukhara business that you want so badly. Maybe I want to hold on to it. Maybe I don't want to get rid of it so quickly. If you want it, it must be worth something, right? I own some land up north or something. I bought like 1,000 years ago. Sitting on farmland or something. And I got this Arab guy calling me, like for the last 2 years, trying to get me to sell it to him. I says, sell it. If he's calling me every night, it must be. I'm not a real estate agent, but if he's calling me every night, it must be. I don't want to sell this so quick. I don't know the guy's name, but I try to be kind to him. You know, like some called guy up north that wants me to buy my land. So they were like, look at my phone. That's what the number is. So, like, what is this thing you want so badly, Yaakov? Right? Isn't that an idiot? So Yaakov said, well, it has to do with serving in the Beis HaMikdash. And, you know, serving the Beis HaMikdash is a part of the original plan. A lot could go south. A lot could go sideways. You make the wrong step. You get kares. You bring the wrong carbon. You get incinerated. You pigol and onshin. Matim shol avodazu. I'm only kama as haros the onshin rashi misos tulim basoros beis. Esav says, whoa, pump the brakes. You know, chir alech lamos. This religion thing is going to kill me. I don't want to be a bechor. I make the wrong step. I'm going to die. You take it. Well, that's what religion is. Fear, mistakes, punishment. It's glory. It's transcendence. It's an encounter with the other. And because it is so surpassing, that's why there are stiff penalties and accountability. The penalties are not penal and punitive. The penalties preserve the transcendence, preserve the integrity. If I say something wrong to Daniel Huffman, I hope I don't, but okay, you're my guy, you're my friend. But the Malach Malachi Amlachim and the right to walk in the Beis Hashem, the right to stand in that Beis Medrash and go daven now. And so you guys see seats, I see ghosts. I see every seat that you sit in, who sat before you. So that's where Rabbi so-and-so sat. That's where Knesset member so-and-so sat. That's where I see spirits walking to the Beis Medrash. When I see you sitting in a seat and not living up to that seat's expectations, it hurts me deeply. I mean, you have to be a Mr. Piety. Just do what you're told. You know, do your job. Just come and dive in and learn and respect the institution, respect yourself. Especially when I see, I shouldn't say this, but I feel it when I see people sitting in the seats of those who died on Kiddush Hashem. I say, who sat there, people whose names are on walls and whose names are in the libraries. I say, what are you sitting in that seat? Just be quiet. Don't, you're davening. Just say, Hey, Shmirab, just be respectful. Sit and learn again, or just do the right thing. So religion isn't about punishment and penalty. It's about greatness. It's about glory. It's about power. It's about a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And of course, it's going to be very delicate because things that are delicate, the consequences of things you invest emotionally in are grave. You open your heart to love someone, you're going to be hurt. The price of love is to be hurt. The price of relationship with Hashem is delicacy. Yiras Hashem doesn't mean you're frightened. Yiras Hashem means you care about something so much you want to preserve it. It's like having your child or your grandchild on your shoulders. You're not afraid. You're just terrified. And your terror is filled with joy because you have the great privilege to be holding a child on your shoulders. It's a terror that's wrapped in joy. And it's a joy that infiltrates itself with terror because you know how precious this is and you wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. But you're vigilant and you realize the moment is upon you and how much you have to be take care about this opportunity. So Esav gets it all wrong, all he sees. Do you get it wrong? Is that how you see religion? Do you see religion as some angry Hashem who just issues demands and commands and instructions and punishments and averos and onshim? Or do you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu raising you to a different level of experience, offering you a roadmap to life? And of course, the consequences. Guys, no guts, no glory. If you can't handle consequences, you cannot handle greatness. With every great move comes consequence, comes responsibility. Free will, okay?
don't mean anything about this copy, but you are right now just trying to make this as visual and concrete as possible. You are 3 seconds away from killing me. You had a knife, you could kill me. That's your free will. And you will live with that free will for the rest of your life whenever you see me, because you always have that choice. Don't try it. Okay? I come from Brooklyn. Okay? I will kill you 1,000 times before. Don't worry. But you can try. Okay? Seriously. Freedom of choice carries consequence also. Would you advocate freedom of choice simply because the consequences of making the wrong choice? Of course not. So everything in life carries consequence, but consequence creates gravitas, and it's the flip side of grandeur. You know what a life without consequence is? A life of a bachelor who has no responsibilities, no consequence, no people in his life, and his world is about this broad, this big. So if you're fleeing from consequence and responsibility, your ticket of entry to relationships and community is responsibility. If you want to have a family, you have to bear responsibility. If you want to have a relationship with God, you have to bear responsibility. If you want freedom, responsibility. Everything great in life, the ticket to acquiring that is responsibility and duty. Otherwise, it's cheap. You can acquire cheap things in life without responsibility. Real things in life, responsibility. Family, fatherhood, responsibility. Parenting, husbanding, responsibility. Community, responsibility. Privilege, responsibility. Ask yourself this question so many times, right around Kristallnacht. 80 years difference between you and you growing up in wherever you grew up, going to whichever high school you went to, going to whichever camp you went to, upholstered experience, upholstered life, everything's padded, coming to Yeshiva Har Etzion, eating pizza tonight, having a siyum tomorrow, eating turkey tomorrow. 80 years earlier, you're hiding in sewers from Nazis. If you're born not in 2002, but in 1932 or 1922, then at your age, you'd be running and hiding in excrement-filled sewers from Nazis. So Hashem made a decision which wasn't yours to put you into this generation, not that generation. I don't know why you didn't deserve what you got. They didn't deserve what they got. Stop asking why. The real question is what? Okay, what is my responsibility in 2022? Given the life I've led, what does Hashem expect of me? With privilege comes responsibility. With benefits comes duty. So how can I take the world Hashem gave me and make something of it? Don't mourn the fact that you didn't suffer like they did. Don't go down that road. I wish I could have suffered. It's a terrible place to be because it's self-inflicted victimization. Don't be jealous of people suffering just because you don't suffer. People sometimes have that. If Hashem puts you into Medina Yisrael, it's for a purpose. Enjoy it, celebrate it, but make something of it. Earn it. Make it worthwhile. Make a Kodesh Baruch Hu's decision make sense. Don't throw it back in the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what Esav's first issue is. I have 2 minutes before we go to Maariv to elaborate Esav's second issue, so I'll say it really quickly because it is a unique textual phenomena that occurs, as far as I know, only once in all of Tanakh. Trick question. You know the answer. Where are there 5 verbs in a row in Tanakh? Normally, verbs and nouns alternate. Nope. Very good. 6, right? 6 words in a row. 6 verbs. Very good, Gabi. These Gush guys, you see, they know something. Okay? Why? Because Esav was a man of action. He was a Yodeish Tzayis. So he's a man of verbs. Yeah, but if you're a man of verbs, it's also hard to be a man of vision. Because you're so busy, it's hard to think. And you're running all the time in the field, it's hard to see long term. It's hard to see beyond your death. And maybe there are things worthwhile living for that will outlast you. Really? That's your span of vision? The years you inhabit this earth, that's all you can think about? How pathetic. I know how you got to be so pathetic, because you're just too busy, and you don't have time to breathe, and you don't have time to think, and you're working all day, and you're 6 in the morning until 12 at night in the field. When do you have time to think? Guys, slow it down. Read less, think more. Run less, process more. More is less. Less is more. Let's go down.